Coming up is the news.
Headlines this hour. Iranian people fill the streets across the country to mark the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Meanwhile, addressing the rallies in Tehran, President Raisi says enemies have failed in their hybrid war against Iran thanks to the nation's resistance. Also in the headlines, the death toll from Monday's massive quakes that rocked Syria and Turkey tops 25,000. Rescue teams are still pulling people out of the debris alive. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iranians have thronged the streets across the nation to mark the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. People from all walks of life were out on the streets to celebrate the occasion and to renew allegiance to the ideals of the revolution. They were carrying banners and chanting slogans in support of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. People rose up against the corrupt Pahlavi regime in the 1970s. The protests culminated in the toppling of Pahlavi's tyrannical rule and the triumph of the Islamic Revolution on the 11th of February, 1979. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says the West policy of imposing sanctions and maximum pressure on the Islamic Republic has failed, thanks to the resistance of the Iranian nation. Raisi made the remarks in an address to a rally in the capital, Tehran, marking the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. He hailed the nation for its resoluteness in the face of Western pressure, noting that the U.S. and its allies failed to stop the Iranians from making progress. The president also touched on the recent riots in Iran, saying the enemies decided to create chaos by waging a hybrid and psychological war, but to no avail. Raisi underlined that the Iranians managed to make the enemy's plots futile. He said the West, the U.S. in particular, stands accused of human rights violations by waging wars in countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, and Yemen. He added that the West must be held accountable for its crimes in the region. We asked activist and political commentator Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi how different Iran's Islamic Revolution has been compared to other revolutions around the world.
After passage of 4 or 5 months, nowadays, every other day, one of those fake news are being revealed that they were trying to drag the people to the streets by false and fake news. Yet, and behind all those propagandas by the Western countries, and still yet it's going on. So this time again, you may look to the streets of different cities across Iran, and I'm sure that eyes of millions and hundreds of millions of people across the globe is towards Iran today. And I'm sure that they will not be disappointed as people will come into the streets. Iran, Iranian revolution, as you mentioned, has inspired people across the globe. This inspiration that Iran has given to the people of the world has two main important dimensions. First of all, I do believe that it all started with changing, shifting, presenting a new perspective, new point of view it brought a new understanding and new meanings for the term revolution itself, for the term Islam, for the term of social justice. It gave people a new sense, a new understanding.
Human rights activist Mohsen Naqvi says the Islamic Revolution of Iran has been an inspiration to all freedom-loving nations and human rights activists across the world.
The reason why the Islamic Republic is an inspiration to all freedom-loving individuals, not just Muslim activists, but all freedom activists, not just Shia activists, but all activists in the world, is because we are seeing the results and the fruits of the revolution today. We see that there was a time when Palestine was unable to defend itself, when Gaza was unable to defend itself against Israeli atrocities. But it is the blessings of the Islamic Revolution that now Gaza has its own missiles. It is now capable and able enough to defend itself against Israeli arrogance. And this is solely because of the Islamic Revolution. It is solely because of the support that the Islamic government of Iran has provided and facilitated to Hamas and Islamic Jihad. And now we're seeing the beautiful martyrdom operations that are taking place in the West Bank and in Jerusalem. These are all a blessing because the Islamic Revolution was able to provide that inspiration that was unimaginable to anyone at that time.
Pakistani Shia cleric has been detained in Saudi Arabia while he was on the Umrah pilgrimage in Mecca. Alama Nazir Abbas Taqvi's arrest has been shared on his official Twitter account. He can be seen standing at Islam's holiest site with a flag showing the name of the first Shia imam. He remains in the Saudi captivity days after performing the Umrah. Taqvi is the secretary of Shia Ulema Council, a religio-political organization in Pakistan. The social media post has not cited any specific reason behind his detention, but his holding the flag could be a reason since the al-Saud regime does not respect religious freedom and cracks down on those who do not adhere to the kingdom's interpretation of Islam. 5 days after a powerful quake hit the border regions of Turkey and Syria, the death toll continues to rise. Nearly 26,000 people have been confirmed dead in the two countries. The Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says 21,848 people have died in the earthquake and over 80,000 people have been injured. Erdogan says that nearly 13.5 million people have been affected in Turkey. UN Aid Chief Martin Griffiths has described the devastating earthquake as the worst in a century.
What happened here on Monday, the epicenter of the earthquake, was the worst event in 100 years in this region.
He also described Turkey's response to the disaster as extraordinary. Griffiths hopes the aid would reach both government and militant-held areas in Syria, where over 3,500 people have been confirmed dead. Meanwhile, World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom has arrived in Syria's quake-stricken city of Aleppo. Tedros said that he was accompanying emergency medical supplies of around 37 metric tons. Since Monday's earthquakes, rescuers and volunteers have been scrambling with little means to find survivors under concrete debris of collapsed buildings. It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. In the French capital, Paris, police have clashed with people protesting the government's pension reform bill. Hundreds of thousands of people attended the rally, which was also held in a number of other cities across France, seeking to help up or keep up pressure on the government over the reform plan. This is the first weekend of protests over the pension reform bills, which plans to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. President Emmanuel Macron says the reform is vital to ensuring the viability of the pension system. In a statement ahead of the marches, all the main French unions called on the government to withdraw the bill. They warned that they would seek to bring France to a standstill from early March if their demands were not met. This follows the first week of debate on the pension legislation in Parliament. The opposition has suggested thousands of amendments to the bill. Let's get some analysis into this. Elijah Magnier is a journalist and political analyst who joins us from Brussels. Welcome. Mustafa Troyer, academic and political commentator, joins us from Paris. Welcome to you both. Elijah Magnier, I'll start first with you. Towards the end of our news piece there, the debate is going to be held in Parliament regarding bills or amendments that are going to be made. And we know that one of the things that the French are very angry with, to say the least, in particular coming from the unions, is the fact that the French President Emmanuel Macron is going to increase the money allocated for the defense budget by up to a third. I think it translates to a little over 400 billion euros. And, well, the French are coming out saying, you know, that should be spent on pensions or on us. What do you think of that increase that Macron is suggesting that it's going to take place?
Thank you for having me. The problem behind all that comes from the elections, really. When Macron presented himself to the elections, he won 23% of the voters, which is equivalent to more or less 15% of the French population. with this amount of people who accepted and wanted Macron, he has become a president only because the French were caught between a very bad choice and a worse choice. So between him and Marine Le Pen, they choose Macron. Therefore, if we keep in mind that Macron is a president of 15% only of the population, any decision he's taking is unpopular. When he goes to the National Assembly, he doesn't have the majority as he had when he ruled for 5 years. Now he took over in April 2022 and he will remain for 5 years, and he will have many problems during his ruling because the population is against him and against his decision. So let's take, for example, he wants to change the age from 62 to 64. There are many nurses, people working in very different sectors, who started to work at the age of 18. After 41 years, they are entitled to their pension. So they find themselves, they have to work additional 4 or 5 years to meet the standard that Macron is going to push forward. And they don't want that. And it is not only related to the pension scheme or the people are angry. It's related to the war in Ukraine, the devaluation of the euro, the decision that European leaders are taking that are incompatible with the interests of the population. The pension that people are receiving today are insufficient to pushing all the pensioners to go to work again. Doctors, shopkeepers, the people working in supermarkets, they're looking for a job because they can't afford living with the cost of life that is raising. And all that, the French believe, it is the fault of their president, rightly, who has decided to follow the U.S. president policy that is incompatible with the interests of the French population.
Well, Sir Troyer, we're looking at the major unions, 7 of them in total, that have issued a threat against the government, saying that, you know, the country's going to come to a standstill come March if this issue is not resolved. Do you feel like the issue is going to be resolved, A, and B? Do you think that they have the ability to do that?
I'm not sure the question is going to be resolved. We know France is a very violent country when it comes to demonstration. We had the French Revolution and we had May 1968. So it is not something new. Whenever you had some demonstrations and people protesting in France, it has been very violent. So I know that they are going to stick, they are going to carry on the demonstrations, but I'm not sure that they will obtain satisfaction. The reason why is because, as my predecessor said, there's no way we can change things. They voted for Macron. They knew that if Macron was candidate and Marine Le Pen was candidate, they had no choice. They accepted it. So now, and when we look at the situation, it does not only depend on Macron. It is the circumstances that explain the choices now. We see it again. They decided to side. That's what it with the fact where they used to get all their resources. Now things are changing. So it is all the things that they have to take into account to know that, to understand that France cannot afford it anymore. Now it's time for the French people to work, unfortunately. Okay, I know that it's going to be a tough time, but we've got to understand that money is not magic. Okay, money is not magic. I know that some people are very rich. So the rich are not taxed enough. That is another issue. But I think that sometimes when you take some decisions, when you vote for a candidate, when you put a man in place, when you vote for certain, you have a certain conception of the world, you have to take your responsibilities. So French people now are taking their responsibilities. They are right to demonstrate. I'm not saying they are not right. They are right to go to the street and to demonstrate. But I think that it is a bit too late and it's very sad now. There's no way, if France wants to be a great nation, okay, and compete with the Americans, with the British, with the Germans, okay, They have to change things. Pension, we have maybe the best pension system in the world. Okay, when we know that when you retire, you make something like 75 or they are close to 75% of the money you used to make when you were working. Where do you see this one? No way. But we've got to understand, where does the money come from?
Great. Thank you very much for that. Let me thank Mustafa Traore, academic and political commentator from Paris. And we're just listening to Laja Magnier, political analyst there from Brussels. Thank you so much to you both. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in. Russia confirmed staging a massive attack on Ukraine's critical energy facilities. The Russian Defense Ministry has spoken of major air and missile strikes on the power infrastructure of Ukraine's military-industrial complex on Friday. The ministry did not elaborate on the facilities hit. As a result of the strike, the transport of foreign weapons and ammunition by rail to battlegrounds in Ukraine has been blocked. Ukrainian officials say that Russia has hit power facilities in six regions with missiles and with drones, causing blackouts across the country. Ukraine has been bracing for a new Russian offensive ahead of the war anniversary on February 24th. Moscow denies targeting civilians and says the facilities it attacks support Kiev's war machine. The FBI has discovered an additional classified document during a search at the residence of the former U.S. VP, Mike Pence. The investigators found the one-page document in Pence's Indianapolis house. Last month, the ex-VP said his lawyers had discovered dozens of documents that were marked classified at his home. They were turned over to authorities. The developments put Pence in the company of President Joe Biden and his predecessor, Donald Trump. They are both facing investigations for improper handling of classified materials. And that does it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss.
Ya Rabbi, Ya Rabbi, Ya Rab, قوي على خدمتك جوارحي واشدد على العزيمة جوانحي وهب لي الجد في خشيتك والدوام في الاتصال بخدمتك حتى أسرح إليك في ميادين السابقين.
To listeners, as you were previously with us, we had reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful, says, قَوِّ عَلَى خِدْمَتِكَ جَوَارِحِي. Strengthen my limbs in your service. وَشْدُدْ عَلَى الْعَزِيمَةِ جَوَانِحِي. Fortify my ribs in determination. وَهَبْ لِيَ الْجِدَّ فِي خَشْيَتِكَ. Bestow upon me earnestness in fear of you. والدوام في الاتصال بخدمتك and continuity in my beings joined to your service حتى أسرح إليك في ميادين السابقين so that I may move easily towards you in the battlefield of the foremost وأسرع إليك في البارزين and hurry to you among the prominent وأشتاق إلى قربك في المشتاقين وأدنو منك دنو المخلصين so that I desire fervently your proximity among the fervently desirous move near to you with the nearness of the sincere وأخافك مخافة الموقنين so that I fear you with the fear of those who have conviction وأجتمع في جوارك مع المؤمنين so that I gather with the believers in your nearness. In this regard, we said that in this part of the supplication, Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful, is seeing ijabah of the Almighty Allah pretty much closer to him. He sees the doors of Almighty Allah's mercy open to him and the acceptance of his supplications near. Anyway, for these requests to be put into practice, we must be observing some rules. There are some conditions to be met. There are some prerequisites for Almighty Allah's special blessings. We mentioned a couple of them, explained them throughout the different traditions of the Ahlul Bayt and Infallibles. And now we reach one other condition to be met. Purifying the soul from vices and extreme lust. Adorning it with virtues and divine realities. This is one condition for reaching Almighty Allah's special blessings. We will mention Imam Sajjad alayhi salam's words on this concept after a short break.
My limbs for your service and sustain the strength of my hands to preserve in your service and bestow upon me the eagerness to fear you and constantly serve you so that I may lead myself towards you in the field with the vanguards who are in the fore rank and be swift towards you amongst those who hasten towards you and urge eagerly to be near you and draw myself towards you like those who sincerely draw themselves towards you and to fear you like the fear of those who believe firmly in you and that I may join the congregation of the faithful congregated near you.
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here feeling so good about all the things that we went through knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around. Seeing things we can never imagine. Hearing the sound of rivers flow. And this is our reward.
Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, the fourth infallible Imam, in the eighth supplication of Sahifatu Sajjadiyya, mentions some of the moral vices, taking refuge from them to Allah. Allahumma, this is what the words of Imam are. Allahumma inni a'udhu bika min hayajani al-hirs wa sawrati al-ghadab. O Allah, I seek refuge in you from the agitation of craving, the violence of wrath, wa ghalabati al-hasadi wa da'fi al-sabr, the domination of envy, the frailty of patience, wa qillati al-qana'ati wa shakasati al-khuluq, the lack of contentment, surliness of the character, wa ilhahi shahwati wa malakati al-hamiyyah, the urgency of passion and the disposition, wa mutaba'ati al-hawa wa mukhalafati al-huda, following caprice, opposing guidance, wa sinati al-ghaflati wa ta'ati al-kuflah, the sleep of heedlessness and undertaking the toilsome. These are the words of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. These vices are greed, anger, jealousy, impatience, lack of contentment, bad temper, extreme lust, insistence on anger, following the carnal desires of the soul, disagreement with the guidance, ignorance, even attempting more than one's tolerance, choosing the wrong instead of the right, and insistence on sins. Belittling the sins is even mentioned in the words of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. Unthankfulness toward the kind, helping the oppressor and leaving the oppressed, and more and more and more. These are all named and mentioned by Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. In this regard, the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam said, إِنَّ فُلَانَةَ تَصُومُ النَّهَارُ وَتَقُومُ اللَّيْلِ وَلَكِنَّهَا تُؤْذِي جِيرَانَهَا. There is a woman, it was said to the Prophet, who fasts on the days and is awake worshipping at nights, but she is bad-tempered, she annoys her neighbors. قَالْ لَا خَيْرَ فِيهَا هِيَ مِنْ أَهْلِ النَّارِ. The Prophet said, she is of no good, her place is in the hell. And in this regard, also, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, إِنَّ سُوءَ الْخُلُقُ لَيُفْسِدُ الْعَمَلَ كَمَا يُفْسِدُ الْخَلُّ الْعَسَلُ. Bad temper is the one that spoils the deeds, as does vinegar spoil honey. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
This year, Iran is marking the 44th anniversary of the victory of the glorious Islamic Revolution. This revolution inspired many across the world, especially the people of Africa, who have for centuries suffered from exploitation by Western imperialist powers. A Nigerian intellectual, Sadiq Abba, elaborates.
Subsequent developments and scenarios that emerge in Iran prove that, yes, the Iranian revolution is not only a model, but it's a calling to mankind, especially societies and nations that are landlocked by imperialism and exploitative tendencies of neocolonialism.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of news and events making headlines in Africa. The 44th anniversary of the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution is being marked this year amid moves by several African countries to follow Iran's footsteps in resisting imperialist powers. In the recent past, Ghana has moved to dump the US dollar in some of its transactions, while Zimbabwe has banned the export of raw materials in a bid to stop the plunder of the country's natural resources by Western multinationals. In our show today, we are focusing on how the Islamic Revolution continues to inspire African countries and the rapidly improving trade ties between Iran and Africa. Stay with us as our experts give us their insight on today's subject.
Iran's Islamic Revolution, an inspiration for Africa. Iran's Islamic Revolution inspired and continues to inspire the people of Africa in their resistance against exploitative imperialists that seek to loot the continent's natural resources. The Islamic Revolution particularly inspired indigenous South Africans in their struggle to topple the apartheid regime. Nelson Mandela, the South African liberation struggle hero, visited the Islamic Republic of Iran in 1992, 2 years before he was elected president. Upon his arrival in Tehran, Mandela said, "We are here to thank the Iranian government and nation for their support in the black people's struggle against apartheid."
During his meeting with the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Mandela addressed him as "my leader." Well, for more on how the Islamic Revolution continues to inspire African nations, we are joined by Dr. Abubakar Salati Bello, the Vice President of the African Students' Union in the Iranian holy city of Qom, and Mr. Zakir Ahmad, a South African-based lawyer, activist, and political analyst. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today. So let's start off with Dr. Salati Bello. How is the Islamic Revolution viewed by the people of Africa in general?
There is a lot of injustice being perpetrated by the imperialists in the Africa continent. Because of this, most of the Africans, they are seeing Iran as a model, as something that one can be looking upon. Even, for example, like for Nigeria, the history of Islamic Revolution is being studied in the higher education in some universities. For example, colleges of education in Nigeria, in the curriculum, there is an history about Islamic Revolution of Iran. Yeah, that's why the fact that Nigeria is not Iran. But because of the importance of this Islamic Revolution, it's being studied in various universities. There are some secondary schools that they are studying this event of this Islamic revolution. In the perspective of Africa, the Islamic revolution is very, very important, and they are looking up to that Islamic revolution because we are hoping that this Islamic revolution will not only stay in Iran, but if they get across, that is, the thought of Islamic revolution will cut across all the whole continent of Africa and some other countries in the world.
Okay, let's bring in Mr. Zakir. Now, what's the opinion of the masses in Africa regarding the Islamic Revolution of Iran?
There's generally a very positive approach towards the Islamic Revolution. We must bear in mind that one of the test cases within the African continent was South Africa and the Islamic Republic of Iran's approach post-revolution to the apartheid regime. They were one of the first countries to divest from the Sasol project, Sasol being the backbone of petroleum within South Africa. And at the time of Shah, 90% of the petroleum came from the Islamic Republic, but before that, Iran. So therefore, when we look at the approach of the Islamic Republic of Iran towards Africa, and particularly South Africa, it has been one that has asserted the rights of the African people against colonialism and imperialism.
Now, how has the Islamic Revolution contributed to the awakening of the people of Africa in the battle against imperialism and neocolonialism?
Islamic Revolution in Iran, so it has given the people of Africa the capacity, the guts, to be able to face this imperialism. Because up to this moment, we are seeing it, we are looking it outwardly. You'll be saying that maybe the imperialists, they have left. We have had our independence. But in recent, we don't have independence. Innerly, yeah, silently, they are still there controlling everything. The Islamic Revolution, they can see how the Islamic Revolution started. Without anything, it started like that, and you can see the rate of development, the rate of advancement of Iran as a result of chasing away the imperialism. We see development in Iran in education, in technology, in engineering, in a lot of it, because the people are doing things by themselves.
Many analysts believe that the 1979 Islamic Revolution was able to turn Iran from a subservient state to a major power in the West Asia region and an influential player in global politics. Nigerian intellectual Dr. Imam Mukhtar says the Islamic Revolution became victorious because the people of Iran have had enough of imperialism.
The intervention, if you like to call it that, of Ayatollah Khomeini into that boiling point within the Iranian society at that particular point in time was very apt, and it has sent a strong signal to other parts of the world that you can also liberate yourself. Today, what you find is that Iran is not just trying to grow as an emerging power, but is in the rank of contending world powers.
The Islamic Revolution is steadfast in opposing imperialism and neocolonialism. Many nations in Africa are also suffering from neocolonialism and can therefore draw inspiration from Iran's resistance to bullying powers.
The only true anti-imperialist, anti-colonial movement is the Islamic Republic of Iran. And therefore, that is a source of inspiration, that this is a principled movement. This is a movement that stands against colonialism and occupation and imperialism. And in true respects, there's only one country that stands up in the world, and that is the Islamic Republic of Iran, backed by the theory of the Islamic Revolution. If we look at other nations within the region of the Middle East, or we would look at the GCC countries, all of them have actually colluded and aligned themselves with the imperialists and colonialists.
The Islamic Revolution of Iran deeply impacted on the uprising in South Africa against the U.S. and Israeli-backed apartheid regime. Following the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini cut ties with the apartheid government of South Africa and offered assistance to freedom seekers in Africa. Many Southern Africa freedom fighters came to Iran, and eventually they were able to topple the apartheid regime in South Africa. It is on this strong basis that a very good relationship between the Islamic Republic of Iran and a free South Africa was born.
In 1996, the then Iranian President Ali Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani visited South Africa and was warmly received by the then President Nelson Mandela. In a news conference following their meeting, Mandela defended his country's strong ties with the Islamic Republic of Iran and categorically stated that South Africa will not accept being told which countries could be its friends.
But we form our friendships on the basis of principle. And those who are with us when we're all alone will continue to be our friend. And the fact that any particular country may be their enemies does not influence our attitude. We are a sovereign and independent country, and we're prepared to defend that sovereignty and independence, and no country can dictate to us.
Well, what impact did the victory of the Islamic Revolution have on the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa?
The Islamic Revolution of 1979 had a massive impact on the anti-apartheid struggle here in South Africa, and I'll just draw one example. The Qibla movement, which was also an armed movement and a political thought movement founded by Imam Ahmed Qasim in Cape Town, was formed in 1981. They had relied very heavily on the concept of al-mustadafin. And al-mustadafin is a key concept within the Islamic Revolution. And this is where you draw from the rights of the dispossessed to re-establish their rights as equals and to restore their rights as people and human beings and their dignity. Therefore, one cannot discredit the massive impact that the Islamic Revolution had on the anti-apartheid struggle here in South Africa. In fact, many of the Qibla members and operatives went on to become key individuals in running many social organizations later during the liberation period here in South Africa post-1994, as well as holding key positions within government and other institutions and corporate institutions.
Now, South Africa has continued to enjoy close ties with Iran despite being under pressure from Western powers to reduce the level of engagement with Tehran. So what's the importance of these ties?
The South Africa moved closer to Iran because it can see Iran as what is happening to him is similar to what is happening to Iran. And from there, you can see they are sharing technology, they are sharing advancement, they are sharing a lot of things. And that's why you see the Western, the imperialists, they are threatening South Africa. Leave Iran. Don't do anything. Don't do any business with her, but you see, South Africa still insists they are having very good relationship with Iran because Iran supported them during the apartheid time. Iran served as a model for them that if Iran can be able to defeat their own imperialists, the Shah and some other people that are around it, so we can also do the same thing in South Africa. So the relationship is very good, and Iran is always welcome in South Africa.
Namibia and Zimbabwe were also inspired by Iran's Islamic Revolution during the struggle for independence. Iran supported the Southwest Africa People's Organization, a political party in Namibia, and the former independence movement in the country. Iran allowed SWAPO's diplomatic representation in Tehran and offered military, educational, and diplomatic support to SWAPO.
Zimbabwe and Iran also enjoy cordial relations dating back to the liberation struggle, which saw Harare attaining its independence in 1980. Now, how was Zimbabwe inspired by Iran's Islamic Revolution in its struggle for independence and continued resistance against Western powers that have imposed sanctions on this country?
The President Mugabe of Zimbabwe, he tried to have a very close relationship with Iran. And with that, he was able to develop his country to some level. And despite the fact there is a great of, they are giving him sanctions, different sanctions, because he's not working with the West, with Zimbabwe. Because before the coming of Mugabe, you can say maybe roughly 90% of the land, 90% of the land of Zimbabwe is in the hand of the White. So when President Mugabe came into power, he drew all of them out, that the land belonged to us, not you. So he handed over the land down to the people, the citizens, the real citizens, that they will be using it for their farming and some other things that they are doing. So they learn a lot of things with the Islamic Revolution of Iran, and they have a very good relationship with Iran, and there is a lot of transfer of technology, transfer of various experience that Iran has had to the Zimbabwe.
Well, I would like to thank Dr. Salati Bello for his insight on how the Islamic Revolution in Iran continues to inspire African nations. We shall take a short break before we continue our discussion with Mr. Zakir Ahmad in Johannesburg. Stay with us.
Iran's Islamic Revolution, an inspiration for Africa.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Several African countries have faced U.S. sanctions due to various reasons. Now, currently, Zimbabwe is under severe EU and U.S. sanctions. Speaking during a previous session of the UN General Assembly, Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa said his country has been able to achieve milestones in development despite the illegal sanctions.
These achievements are in spite of the continued albatross of the illegal economic sanctions. These sanctions constitute a denial of the human rights of the people of Zimbabwe to develop and improvement of their quality of life. Furthermore, the sanctions are slowing down our progress, inhibiting our economic recovery, and punishing the poorest and the most vulnerable in our society.
Now, what experience can Zimbabwe draw from Iran, which continues to resist sanctions and has in fact attained self-sufficiency in various sectors?
If we look at the response of the Islamic Republic to global sanctions, it has been something that defies logic and astonishes most analysts. The Islamic Republic has resisted the attempts to economically cripple them, have developed indigenous arms systems, indigenous weapon systems. They have produced enough to sustain their own population in terms of food and other resources, and they have managed to make their economy a self-sustaining economy. This is the example that the countries that you have just mentioned, Zimbabwe, one of them, should actually follow. It requires, though, as a prerequisite, a discipline. It requires a principled, and it requires a leadership that is truly concerned about their population and not governed by the principles of self-interest and greed. That is what separates Iran from every other country. It's not just the mechanism of countering sanctions and developing their own indigenous capabilities to sustain their populations, but it's also a principled leadership.
The trade ties between Iran and Africa have seen tremendous progress over the last year. Iran exported 2.29 million tons of non-oil products valued over $1 billion to the African countries during the period from March 2022 up to December 2022.
Speaking before his visit to Africa last year, Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian stated that the Iranian government prioritizes strengthening relations with African countries. Well, the export of Iranian products to Africa has increased rapidly over the last 2 years. Now, what are the major factors behind these increase?
The major factor, I believe, is the recognition that the BRICS alliance is particularly important within the global domain. We have seen a systematic failure of the Western world to sustain a stable global economy. We see exactly that taking place with the issue of Russia and Ukraine, whereas global food supplies and global reliance on food and grains have been disrupted tremendously for political gains as opposed to any other gain. And this is seen from the prism of the global South as reckless and particularly dangerous. Therefore, we had to look at principled partners. We have to look at individuals that had the global economy and global stability at heart. And this is why we see the Islamic Republic as a self-sustaining economy, as one that has rejected sanctions and has sustained sanctions, has been able to prosper under these very difficult conditions as a perfect model and partner. This coupled with the fact that it is part of the BRICS nations. That is why when you look at the Iran-Africa Merchants Club, you see a massive increase in trade, up 39% in the last 8 months of 2022. So we see these individuals, or rather countries, as burning stars for us to migrate towards to ensure the stability of our own economies as well as stability of the African continent.
African countries such as Zimbabwe and DRC are working towards value addition of their raw materials to improve their economies and stop the plunder of their country's natural resources by Western countries. Iran has been able to develop its manufacturing industry despite crippling sanctions. Africa and Iran collaborating can establish close cooperation in effective utilization of these natural resources.
Iran has opened 8 trade centers in Africa aiming to develop trade ties with Africa. Now, the trade centers are located in Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Cameroon, Senegal, Nigeria, and South Africa. Now, what more steps are needed to be taken to further deepen trade ties between Iran and Africa?
With Iran and Africa, there's a very big need for infrastructure. If I take, for example, South Africa in itself, South Africa is in dire need of infrastructure and basic resources such as power generation. The Islamic Republic of Iran has succeeded in establishing their own basic infrastructure, providing systems and their own indigenous development capabilities. However, I think the first step is to provide the support to the African continent in terms of infrastructure and power generation, as well as clean drinking water. These are basic necessities that are required desperately by the African continent. There's a lot in Africa that can be offered. We have a very vast pool of resources, and this is a natural ally to the Iranian people in the sense that we have both a legacy of anti-colonialism, anti-imperialism, and we can draw from that. I think a partnership in relation to infrastructure would be most positive in developing the channels of economics even further and mutual trade.
Well, there you have it. Iran and Africa are natural allies as they both have a legacy of anti-colonialism. Unfortunately, our time is up for today. And I would like to thank our guest, Zakir Ahmed, for his insight on how the Islamic revolution in Iran continues to inspire African nations. And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. Thanks a lot and goodbye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.